40 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour.
I'm Linda Kenyon in Washington. More fallout after the release of that video showing the police beating death of Tyre Nichols. CBS's Skylar Henry has the latest.
Five officers involved who were fired are facing multiple charges, including second-degree murder. Memphis police confirmed Monday that a sixth officer, Preston Hemphill, has been relieved of duty since the beginning of the investigation for his role in the incident. Several others who arrived on the scene are also under investigation.
He's there, handcuffs, moaning on the ground, and everybody's walking around nonchalantly like it's business as usual. So it should be accountability for everybody on the video.
That's Nichols family attorney Ben Crump. Meanwhile, three Memphis Fire Department officials have been fired, and they could face charges in connection with the death of Tyre Nichols. A Chicago prosecutor is dropping sex abuse charges against singer R. Kelly. Speaking to fellow sexual assault victims.
As a survivor, I know that the courage that it took for them to come forward, and I know that for those who were seeking to have their day in court here in Illinois, that today's announcement may be disappointing.
But Kim Fox says R. Kelly will be in prison for decades anyway on federal convictions. A trial is underway in New York for a woman accused of trying to kill a friend by giving her cheesecake laced with poison.
Victoria Nasora is accused of coming up with the intricate scheme.
This woman concocted a calculated plan.
Prosecutor Constantinos Liturgas, in his opening statement, told jurors the poison cheesecake was a key element.
To get her alone in a room, to try to kill her, and to take her identity.
Nasora's friend did eat the cheesecake, then passed out. She survived, but when she came to, realized her passport and other items were missing. Nasora is also suspected of drugging men that she met on a dating website, then stealing their money. Steve Futterman, CBS News.
Winter storm watches and warnings stretch from Texas to Pennsylvania. WCBS radio meteorologist Craig Allen.
Inland portions of Texas, as well as on up across the Mississippi Valley and on up towards the Great Lakes. This is an area where there is precipitation, where there is moisture, and it is falling in the form of snow, sleet, and freezing rain.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken is in Israel, where he's been discussing several issues, including Iran's nuclear ambitions.
We agree that Iran must never be allowed to acquire a nuclear weapon.
Secretary Blinken also urged Israel and the Palestinians to do everything possible to calm recent tensions. Former British Prime Minister Boris Johnson discussing a phone call with Russian President Vladimir Putin before the invasion of Ukraine.
He threatened me at one point and said, you know, Boris, I don't want to hurt you, but with a missile, it would only take a minute or something like that, you know.
Boris Johnson made his comments during an interview with the BBC. This is CBS News.
WAUK 540 AM, Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
From the Civic Media News Desk, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. The Republican flat tax may not make it to this year's budget debate after all. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss tells the Upfront program on Milwaukee's Channel 12 he understands Governor Evers would veto a flat tax. Voss says as long as lawmakers cut taxes, he really doesn't mind how. Wisconsin has a $7 billion budget surplus. The governor delivers his budget address on February 15th. After a big dumping of snow this weekend, snowmobile trails are now open throughout Wisconsin. Some trails are not groomed, so local snowmobile groups say to be careful. Lakes, ponds, and marshes that look safe may not be completely frozen. In sports, the Bucks beat New Orleans yesterday 135-110. The Eagles and Chiefs will play in the Super Bowl in 2 weeks. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Papa, why can't we telegraph while riding a horse?
Son, there ain't no one to blame but Jeffro. He was riding old Betsy the Stallion, tip-tapping away at his telegraph, when blam, ran right into the side of the saloon.
Well, if Jeffro can't do it, neither should you. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
I'm looking at the phone lines. I'm seeing some familiar faces. What's your name? Gina Beauclair.
Well, welcome back, Matt. Dad. I really miss him. We've been missing getting woke every morning, but now we'll get woke in the afternoon.
What's your mind to Andrew of Detroit?
Professor, it's so nice you're back. We missed you during your vacation, and I'm very happy to be in your class for the semester.
Thanks a lot for calling in. I appreciate all my callers.
Tune in to Matt Flynn Direct, Monday through Friday, 3 to 4 p.m.
Remember the last time your family visited the forest? It's a place of wonder and imagination for the whole family, where stories come to life, and it's closer than you think. Ready to plan your next visit? Make the forest part of your story today at a local park near you, or find one at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
The Shaw 101 FM, New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com. A progressive voice from Beaver Dam to Kenosha. WAUK 540 AM, always streaming at WAUK.
To vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So our quote of the day, former Obama senior advisor Dan Pfeiffer, he wrote, I worked in the West Wing during a financial crisis, a pandemic, multiple active terrorist plots, once in a century storms, and the rise of ISIS. None of those threats were anywhere near as frightening as the two times the House Republicans tried to take the full faith and credit of the United States hostage. He writes, in both cases, a group of radical extremists with a faint grasp of reality, led by a weak speaker, almost stumbled ass backwards into the global financial crisis that would make 2008 look like an economic head cold. And look where we are now. Right back where we are. The hostage situation hath begun, and the assault on working people continues. And now in full court press by Republicans, conservative front groups, wealthy donors, and now we're going to rein in spending. I don't know if you saw the speaker over the weekend. McCarthy was on one of the talking head shows talking about, we need to get Washington spending under control. And that's code for there's a Democrat in the White House, and now's a good time to hold the globe hostage so we can go after those entitlement programs. You know, your Social Security and your Medicare that you paid for. Yeah, they've named that entitlement programs. You earned those. You paid for those. Those are yours. But they're trying to take them. And here to share some thoughts on where we are, I've asked Michael Lighty to come talk with us. Michael's the president of Healthy California Now. HealthyCA.org is their website. Here to share some thoughts on what we're seeing as the push to destroy our Medicare system. Michael, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick. Great to be here.
You know, it's interesting to me that, you know, whenever we get into these moments and you got a Republican-controlled House and there's a Democrat in the White House, it's always this ticking bomb kind of scenario of, you know, how much can they get? How much screwquester? How many pounds of flesh? And how do working people take it on the chin? And Social Security at the front of it, Medicare at the front of it. And it's amazing to me that even someone like Donald Trump says, leave that alone. That we don't push back harder.
I agree. And the fact is, much of this debt that they don't necessarily want to honor is as a result of the tax cuts for the rich. So we get it coming and going. And in fact, Social Security contributes nothing to the deficit. It's separately funded. The trust fund, the payroll taxes we pay go into that trust fund, and that's not part of the general fund. Medicare, of course, is the best deal going. Ask anyone who's 64 how desperate they are to get on Medicare, you know, turn 65 and get on Medicare. Healthcare costs go through the roof. Administration and profits in the private sector, huge. In Medicare, it's 2%. 2% of the dollar goes to something other than patient care, 98% for the health care we need. That's just too good of a deal. That's too good of a government program for the GOP to leave alone.
Yeah, I mean, it's just one of these things where you go, we just common sense. And this is where, you know, I almost don't care if it's a public or a private pool, but one giant insurance pool seems like the most common sense way to mitigate risk. Everybody in. It seems, I don't know, even a dumb truck driver can figure that out.
Well, it's exactly right. And in fact, that is why Medicare is so successful for that group of people who are in that risk pool, right, over 65. But it's just common sense. What's going to have leverage against this huge healthcare industry of all these hospitals and pharmaceutical companies? Who's going to have leverage to actually negotiate so you can control costs? It's going to be one risk pool. It's exactly right. And it's the one thing that our system lacks that characterizes other national systems. The fragmentation and the resulting waste and profiteering is at the heart of our problems.
Do you find it interesting, like I do, that they've labeled Social Security and Medicare as entitlement programs?
Yes, I do, Rick. As a matter of fact, that's a way to delegitimize it, because somehow in the right-wing universe, if you're, you know, non-deserving, you get an entitlement. And in fact, as you said, it's an earned benefit. We paid for it. Payroll taxes have gone up to pay for it. In both cases, actually, Medicare and Social Security. So it's just another messaging point, and I'm afraid that the other side, you know, our side in favor of Social Security and Medicare, hasn't necessarily done as good a job. And we've often accepted that frame of entitlement.
Yeah, I've never have, because look, I pay to do it every week. I see it come out of my check, and I know the good that it did for my grandparents. You know, my grandmother was allowed to, you know, my grandparents lived in their home. Social Security, their union pension, and a little bit of a savings got them through their lives. Medicare saved their lives number of times. They didn't die in medical debt. Sounds like a good bargain to me. I don't know why we'd want to destroy it.
I agree. My grandparents in the same situation. My grandmother diabetic for over 35 years. Medicare paid for her insulin. My grandfather's painter's pension kept them, safe and sound. And you're absolutely right. The only reason they want to go after them is because they work, because they're a successful example of government providing for people and meeting working people's needs. And that's, of course, the opposite of what that Republican philosophy is all about.
See, this is one of those things where I'm torn, and maybe you can help, because I'm torn down the middle on this. Is it the hatred of government and the belief that government can do nothing, and then they set out and prove that government can do nothing? Or is it just the greed that they want to get, their corporate masters want to get their hands on all that money and all that ability to deny us the things that we need? And I look at these Advantage plans. I look at how much it costs, the privatization that we've inflicted on Medicare already and the damage that it's doing. I look at this and I go, you know, which is it? Is it, or is it both?
I think it's both, because look at take Social Security. Well, if you privatize Social Security, where does that retirement monies go? Into Wall Street's investment pools. They make huge commissions off that money. On the other hand, what happens if government doesn't look like it can take care of the elderly? Well, that delegitimizes government. That justifies tax cuts for the wealthy. It's all of a piece, I think, Rick. And in the case of Medicare, the truth is that those that you periodically hear about insolvency and so forth, that's just, again, a ruse to say we're not willing to pay for it, even though it's the most efficient and effective healthcare program out there. And so we privatize it, because what they want to do, they don't necessarily want to reduce the cost of Medicare. They want to shift the cost, right, from the public to the private, and shift the burden so that people can say, politicians, others, well, hey, that's not us. That's your private Medicare plan. Go talk to them. And the truth is that privatization has been a bipartisan dynamic. And that this goes back to the Balanced Budget Act of 1997, when they opened the door to privatize Medicare. And ever since then, Medicare has gotten more private, our life expectancies have decreased, and our share of the GDP going into healthcare spending has risen. So it's not exactly working.
No, again, this is where I say Republicans and corporate Democrats have destroyed this country in ways that we could spend days talking about, from media control to bad trade policies to the privatization of Medicare that gets us to this point. So the question then becomes, how do we reclaim this message? Because when you sit down and you explain to people, they go, you go, look, the amount of money that's being spent on these privatized plans is more than we spend on the traditional Medicare, which, you know, if you were to take, you would have threatened to take from my grandmother, she'd have beat you with her walker. How do we reclaim that?
Well, I think the people's experience in these Medicare Advantage plans, it sounds good. Hey, more benefits, might cost me less. But the truth is that once you actually need health care, they start denying it and you have no way to appeal it. And traditional Medicare comes with guarantees. Basically, if your doctor orders it, you're going to get it and you have a very clear path to appeal if that doesn't happen. How we're going to change it is improve Medicare, first step. Like what we tried to do with Build Back Better was cover prescription drugs more effectively, cover, you know, lower prices, cover eyeglasses and hearing and dental benefits. Then the rationale for these private plans goes away. Secondly, we've got to really be serious about creating that single risk pool you're talking about. And the best way to do that is Medicare for All. Everybody in, nobody out, have the leverage to lower drug prices, get the profits out of healthcare, and just make sure that the money goes to people's healthcare, not the private company's profits. The profits are huge. This one estimate had overpayment in Medicare Advantage plans over a 10-year period of over $130 billion. Actually, a 9-year period, 2010 to 2019. So it's really extraordinary how
what?
Much.
What?
Yeah. Yes.
What?
This UC, University of California, San Diego economist, when you add everything up, his initial base estimate was $106 billion. And then you go on top of that, you get as much as $130 billion. And you look at United Healthcare itself, right, has 6 million Medicare Advantage plans. It received excess payments of $6 billion. Excess payments.
And how does that happen? I mean, you know, and then why aren't we holding them criminally responsible? I mean,
yes. Well, because CMS is complicit. Basically, they had an audit program that showed these overpayments. And just today, they announced that they're actually not going to demand any of that money back. Because they are basically in bed with the insurance companies. And it's really, there's blood on everybody's hands on this one. Because they have the tools, they have the audit, they know what has happened, and they refuse to go after them. They refuse to lower the rates that these Medicare plans get for paying for sicker people. But the fact is, they can't prove that those people are actually sick, and they can't even document the basis for the extra reimbursement they ask for.
So is this the upcoding that we hear about? That
you know, is the upcoding.
This is where they send people to your house to convince you that there's something wrong with you, so you'll go, and the commercials on TV for you to ask your doctor and all this stuff. Is that this part of all this?
That is exactly the part of it. That's exactly the part of it. And it's largely responsible for the overpayments. And they really, they're kind of reimbursement in one single year. For example, Medicare paid $2.6 billion for diagnosis backed up only by those health assessments that you talked about where someone comes to the home. They said they had no records for 3.5 million people that actually, you know, they got any of the care that this assessment called for.
Wow.
And CMS knows this. And they don't do anything about it because they are so compromised with the industry.
I mean, so the swinging door, this is the swinging door in action. This is the revolving door of, you know, regulators overseeing industry and then going back into industry. This is that thing.
And it's congressional pressure. So Kristen Sinema led an effort among 15 senators to say, do not cut Medicare Advantage reimbursements. Even though everyone knows they're overcharging Medicare. So it's political pressure from Congress as well.
It's crazy. I mean, and again, we don't hear this stuff. I mean, this is the first I'm hearing of a lot of this stuff. You know, because I did have some questions, like on the drug issue. I know Medicare cannot negotiate for prescription drug prices because, thanks George W. Bush, we're Americans, damn it. We pay full price. But these Advantage plans, they get to negotiate for lower prices, right?
Yes, they do.
So this is the gimmick. This was the poison pill to destroy to bring the whole system down.
Yeah. Well, the privatization is the camel nose under the tent that's undermining traditional Medicare to the point where you can question its solvency. So exactly, they basically create a situation where more and more the private funds divert money from traditional Medicare, right? It's like 102% of the cost of traditional Medicare. And so all of a sudden you say, well, Medicare doesn't have any money because it's gone over to the private companies. They, as I mentioned, Medicare is 98% goes to patient care of each dollar. For these private plans, it's 85%, 15% in overhead and profits. So you siphon all that money and then you say, gee, Medicare's, you know, going bankrupt. Well, I wonder why.
So, you know, I guess the last line of questioning I've got for you, because I'm outraged. I got to imagine people who are, you know, looking at Medicare for the future, you know, worried that it's going to be there. They've got to be outraged. What do people do?
Well, I think we do have to demand an improvement in traditional Medicare. And just like they privatized the drug plans, we got to get rid of that. We got to be able to negotiate drug prices, all drug prices, not 20, but all drug prices through Medicare. And create that risk pool for that. We've got to expand the eligibility of Medicare. Remember, that was the idea originally, Build Back Better, go down to 55. Yes, we need to do that, and we need to keep going down. Because what's going to happen as a result of this debt limit is some commission's going to come out and say, let's raise the Medicare age to 67, right?
Yep.
And my God, it's already bad enough out there waiting to turn 65. Imagine two more years, right? So we have to be able to both fight defensively against the privatization, not only against Medicare Advantage, but this other program called ACO REACH. And we've got to then demand Medicare for all. And the way to get there is to improve Medicare and then to make sure that we lower the eligibility age ultimately to everybody.
Yeah, I'm a supporter of Medicare for all because, look, you know, what we do, what the public pays for are the most expensive people in healthcare. We pay for the young, we pay for the old. Half of all children born in this country are born on Medicaid. We take care of the poor with the indigent with Medicaid, and the elderly who use the most of their health care in the last 5 years of their life, we've got on Medicare. And then now we're feeding an industry of executives and shareholders now, evidently, too. The healthy people pay insurance premiums to these big companies, and they're siphoning healthcare dollars off. It just seems like common sense to put everybody into that one pool, have one insurance company that pays one set of things. That just seems logical. I guess probably why it'll never happen.
Well, it's not just logical. It's a matter of dollars and cents. I mean, the Congressional Budget Office estimated save $650 billion. In California, the estimate is $158 billion by 2031 if we went to Medicare for all style health system. So and in fact, we can do that, Rick, as you know, and eliminate the out-of-pocket costs we got. No more of those deductibles, right, which is the amount you pay for care after you paid for insurance, the co-pays that you have to do. And the premiums, of course, go away. So it's really quite extraordinary the amount of success the healthcare industry has had lobbying these elected officials to not only privatize the existing public programs, but to prevent the very common sense solution that we all need to be in one program.
Now, I would argue not just lobbying our elected officials, but us. I mean, you know, there are people, no, I don't want Medicare. And you go, do you know? I love my privatized healthcare that denies my care. I love the shiny card in my wallet.
Yeah, it's really something. And the same thing with Medicare Advantage. All those ads on TV, how can you resist, right? I mean, the constant barrage of advertising and the constant barrage that, oh, the private sector is always better, right? Well, yeah, for them.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Michael, I appreciate the time. If folks want to get more information, healthyca.org, the website, right?
That is the website. You can go to that website and calculate how much you can save under Medicare for All. And you'd be surprised to learn it's thousands of dollars a year.
Yeah, if only we had a movement to move in that direction. Michael Leidy, I appreciate the time. I hope you'll come back and talk to us again real soon.
Oh, I would love to, Rick. Thanks a lot.
Good stuff. Make sure you check out the website, healthyca.org. We'll get links out on social media. How you can take a look at that. I want to hear your thoughts. 1-866-416-RICK. 1-866-416-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. you're a fan of the show, you've heard our Labor History in 2 segments, and you can hear them on the radio pretty much anywhere in the U.S. Labor history has never been more important than it is right now. So here's what we'd like you to do. Tell a teacher. Tell a teacher that labor history is important and that they can get digestible 2-minute lessons that are absolutely free. Free to download, free to use, free to share. Tell a teacher to go to thericksmithshow.com/history and help us put labor back where it belongs, in the classroom. You know, generations of American workers fought, bled, and died to build the American way of life. It's our job to keep their stories alive. Go tell a teacher that we're here to help them do just that. Find us at thericksmithshow.com/history today.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I listened to the numbers, and you look at the amount of money that we spend on these Advantage plans, and it is, it's ridiculous. I mean, it really is. It should be criminal. And to have legislators who, you know, Senator Dipsy Doo from Arizona, you know, jumping into that, it's quite remarkable. And the question is how much more of this are we going to put up with? Well, eventually we wake up and say, no, we demand better. We want better. I don't know. Let's go to the phones. Got Alice on one. Alice, how you doing?
Oh, I'm doing well, better than I have been. Let's talk about the broken health care system. As y'all know, my husband was taken into the hospital Wednesday night, transported from one hospital to the other. Well, he didn't get operated on until today. They had kept saying, oh, we're going to do it Saturday. Then Saturday they said, oh, well, we can't, blah, blah, because, and their story was, they couldn't find an anesthesiologist. They were shorthanded.
Wow.
And they told us, well, it's not just you. We're backed up with all kinds of surgeries. So he wasn't operated on until today.
Wow. But here's the thing, and this is, I hear this all across the country. You know, coming out of this pandemic, the number of people who have left the industry because of, you know, name the reason, and we haven't replaced them fast enough. And I don't know if that's you know, true in every area, but especially in small rural areas. Yeah, I think the shortage is huge. That's horrible.
Yeah, it is. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, because this is a major hospital where, you know, we took him to. It's in West Virginia. And I thought, this is ridiculous when this huge hospital claims that their problem is they can't find the anesthesiologist. I thought, no, and if it's not just this major healthcare system, you know, it's a teaching hospital. I thought, these other hospitals, my gosh.
Yeah, imagine. No, I hope he does well. I hope he's okay. I hope he recovers well. Wow.
Yeah, so I just wanted to interject that in there.
I appreciate it.
As an example. So thanks, and he came through surgery well. So I'll talk to you later.
Best to him and you. Thank you, Alice. It's scary. And look, you know, the sad reality is, you know, when my son had his appendix burst, it was kind of the same thing. We were on a holding pattern, waiting for an anesthesiologist, waiting for an operating room, waiting for the resources that because of consolidation, not there. It's you know, and healthcare is one of these things where instead of, you know, it's shrinking, instead of contraction, we should be expanding. Healthcare is one of those industries we should be moving people into. You want to go and be a nurse? Tuition's free. You want to go to be a doctor? We're going to pay for that. We're not going to saddle you with a lifetime of debt and a lifetime of student loans. But are we moving on those policies? No. No. And for me, the idea of, I don't want the government running the hospitals. I don't want them hiring the doctors. I want hospitals to run independently. I want them to be run by actual doctors, not bean counters. You know, I know my military friends love TRICARE and the universal system, the government-run healthcare system that is the military system. I don't know in this country if that would fly. But to have one insurance pool just makes sense from the administrative costs, just makes sense in the in the forms, filling out the forms and calling one office, in the having one schedule and not, you know, I had someone, you know, lay out to me why the difference in prices because of the different kinds of baskets that people fall in, self-pay, private insurance.
WAUK 540 AM, New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
CBS News Brief. Another Memphis police officer has been disciplined in the Tyre Nichols case. Here's CBS's Jim Crisula.
A Memphis police officer identified as Preston Hemphill has been suspended for his involvement in the fatal beating of Tyre Nichols. He's been relieved of duty with pay pending an administrative hearing.
Five officers have already been fired and charged with murder. Three fire department employees also fired. Dicey weather from Texas to Pennsylvania. Here's WCBS radio meteorologist Craig Allen.
Actual ice storm warning for some major cities like Little Rock to Pine Bluff. Jonesboro is included in this. Memphis, Tennessee as well, or cross over towards Jackson and Lexington.
President Biden is ending COVID-19 emergency declarations on May 11th.
What this means, though, is that things like vaccines and treatments will no longer be covered by the federal government and then will be covered by insurance, and prices of those are expected to go up significantly.
CBS News medical contributor Dr. David Agus. This is CBS News.
WAUK 540 AM, Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
From the Civic Media News Desk, I'm Jane Matinere. Here's what you need to know. Thieves targeting mailboxes to commit check fraud is a growing problem in some Wisconsin communities. The thieves steal mail to get personal and financial information and sometimes change the amount or names on a check to steal money. That's called check washing. Stolen checks can also be sold on the dark web. Postal officials recommend you don't put mail into a mailbox after the last posted collection time. The body of a 45-year-old man was pulled from Lake Wabisa Sunday morning after an ice fisherman and didn't make it back home as expected the night before. The Dane County Sheriff's Office, along with search and rescue teams, focused on an area where an ATV had apparently broken through the ice. That's where the victim's body was found. He was declared dead at the scene. The man's name hasn't been released, pending the notification of family. I'm Jane Matinere for Civic Media News.
What is dadication?
I think a parent's job is to protect our children, but also prepare them for the world so they become good, kind human beings.
That's dadication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov.
Dad, I picked up your pills, made your lunch, and your laundry is done.
When you care for a loved one, you take care of everything. But are you taking care of yourself? Find free care guides at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Catch Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlo at its brand new time, 6 to 8 a.m. weekdays.
The city of Shanghai started administering an inhalable COVID-19 vaccine. I hear a lot of you saying the same thing I had in my head. I don't know about that.
As long as they're not just crop dusting everyone.
Crop dusting, that's exactly what I think people would be fearful of. I would not trust the Chinese government. I would trust people who really know about inhaling something and the good that it does you. Of course, I'm talking about Dom and Crute.
We are joined by the 57th Assembly District Representative, Lee Snodgrass. Thanks for being here.
Listen Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. for As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
How do I need to adapt this based on what has changed since I first introduced it? Government does not move fast. I'm sure that's a shocker to all of you guys. Public policy doesn't change until public opinion changes.
Listen to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry right here on the Shaw 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM.
It's 4 a.m. and you're sucking baby snot through a tube because she's congested. If you love her that much, love her enough to make sure she's buckled in the right car seat. Find out more at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Integrity of elections? He's only clinging to George because his own support in the House is so iffy that he needs Santos's vote to save his own worthless political hide. This is Jim Hightower saying, Santos is a congenital liar, but McCarthy is a self-serving political hack, and neither one should be in public office.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So evidently, a number of states, Arizona, Michigan, New Hampshire, and Wisconsin, the state Republican parties are saying, we want more Trump. Evidently, the disappointing midterms that they had, they want their star to come back and rile the troops, which is going to be interesting considering the potential for indictments, well, any day now down in Georgia. Well, again, we'll see. We've been down this road, Mueller, you know, Merrick Garland's coming, all of this stuff. I don't know. Georgia's always been that blind spot. Anyway, here's share some thoughts on more Trump. Our good friend, former Ohio congressman and political analyst Bob Ney. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick.
So are indictments coming? Are we planning this? I know I've been hearing this for, well, it's been 4 or 5 years now that they're coming for him. They're going to get him. Do you expecting anything?
Well, I've always said that the weak spot is going to be New York. And then after that, after the election, then Georgia was added to that list. I still think New York's a possibility for a couple of reasons. Of course, the company, you know, had problems in New York. But I believe indictments, plural.
Plural.
Yes, plural, are going to be on the way. And if you look at a statement made today, I don't know why, I don't know if this is getting a lot of press attention, but it should. To look at the kind of weird, I guess you'd call it, grand jury system Georgia has. They have two, the grand jury and the special grand jury. It's a little bit different than a normal special grand jury. If you resisted in the grand jury, then you can have a special grand jury convened and has more of the ability, as I understand it legally, to drag people in, which they did, whether it was Lindsey Graham or, you know, Rudy or, you know, the former general that was drug in. They have the ability to do that. Now, Fannie Willis, who's the, I think it's Fulton County,
right,
you know, DA, the media is hounding the judge. They want to release parts of what the special grand jury is going to send the grand jury, all right? Which, by the way, the grand jury that convenes is convening as we speak today and tomorrow, and I don't know how many days after that. So that's kind of interesting. And Fannie Willis went before the judge, and if you look at what she said, as I understand it, she said that she doesn't want anything released because of the defense capabilities of the potential defendants, plural. She said that.
Okay, yeah.
All right? So if you look at what she said before the judge, defendants, she didn't say, I just don't want this released. She said, because of the defense of the defendants, meaning something's coming and it's multiple. Could be two, could be three. Now, I don't know if it's going to be Trump, but I believe it's going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen with Merrick Garland and DOJ, but I do think, because if you, I don't think I'm reading into her statement. I think there's something there.
Interesting. No, I'm hoping there are multiple people indicted in this because this was a massive scheme. I'm hoping there are people who, all of those electors who submitted false paperwork, they should be locked up. There's a lot of these crimes that, you know, you and I would have done. We'd have silver bracelets on right now.
Yeah, I know. I messed a piece of paperwork up. I know.
Yeah. See, you do know. See how the...
I know.
But this
Isn't
is
there,
one of,
done it.
But here again, you know, this is one of those moments where, you know, you ask the average Trump supporter if they'll still support him if he's indicted, and, you know, I'm sure that they're going to go, yeah, because the deep state's coming for him. You know, it's all the deep state. So, you know, this is another one of those moments that, again, you know, feeds into our polarization, don't you think?
Well, it does. Of course, I have a whole different theory. As I said on your show last February, a year ago, that Trump will never be the nominee. If he would go in the convention, he would win. He still will have supporters no matter what happens here down here in Georgia. If he goes in the convention, he will win. But I'm arguing he will not go into that convention as a candidate. Just look at what happened And I don't think I'm over-dramatizing. Look what happened this past weekend. There's something beginning to occur there. Maybe not with the hardcore base, but something occurring there. But back to Georgia, yeah, there would be people that would say that, it's a plot, et cetera. But I don't know who's going to be indicted, but there are going to be, like I said, I believe indictments, plural. Yeah.
Is there a scenario where people are indicted, but it's not Trump? I mean, because we all heard the perfect phone call, which sounds like a crime to me. That sounds like a crime to me.
It could be, but I think that if it was ever happening, it will happen now with Fannie Willis, due to the nature of the phone call of, find me, acquire me. It's not like double check the system to see if there was fraud. It was find me.
Yeah.
Can't you find? So, I mean, you can look at a lot of interpretation of that. But if it's going to happen, it will happen with Fannie Willis. It will not happen with DOJ.
Now,
that's
looking
my
at,
feeling.
And looking at what's going on in Georgia, and they're saying a decision is imminent, and they don't want the special grand jury stuff coming out because it is their roadmap. But also today, they began presenting evidence in New York to a grand jury.
Well, that's what I had just said. The two weaknesses.
Yeah, on the Stormy. This is on the Stormy Daniels thing.
Yeah, New York has always been a weak area, but then this was new, popping up, in Georgia. And again, if you look at how these two grand juries operate down there, and her statement, which I just don't think she would go into court and say, "Oh, I don't want this looked at by anybody right now," but she specifically mentioned doesn't want it to affect the defense of the defendants. So I think it's a foregone conclusion. Something's coming.
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, over the weekend you had the Trump event, a high school auditorium with like 400 people.
Right.
And they were saying it was a low energy rollout of his campaign. And I'm going, low energy rollout, 400 people in a high school gym. That's a no energy rollout.
Well, especially for Trump, because look, as you and I know, he had amazing crowds. Of course, so did Bernie Sanders, when he was first running. And that's a high energy thing. And they were drawing, a lot of people. And Trump had that ability to get, thousands of people out at events. Even last year, he would have the ability to do some things. This year, obviously, a lot has happened. The political base that looks at elections and the people that are kind of the movers and shakers within the Republican side have been laying low. They have been in the last 4, 5, 6 months. They've been laying low on this whole thing. And I think when you go to a Trump event, and then, first of all, it was on purpose, no question about it, Rick, as you know the old trick. You have an event,
a small
you
room.
Put it in a small room in a hotel so that you have to open up the hotel room to fit the crowd, because how you do that, you stage it. But in the first place, to have a Trump event in an auditorium, why? And 100 people outside just waiting to get in when it used to be thousands? I mean, but why in the... why did they do that? Because they knew it was going to be low energy.
Yeah. Did you see this interview over the weekend where the woman asked him, "Can you say something nice about Joe Biden?" And he literally, there was literally nothing he could say.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's kinder in a way to Biden than Mitch McConnell's wife.
Well, there is some truth to that. But I did want to get your thoughts on his backing the Saudi golf tour. Evidently, there are going to be a bunch of professional golfers on this LIV golf tour that's going to be going through his courses in Florida, Virginia, and Florida. In Virginia and New Jersey. Any thoughts on does this hurt him at all? The fact that he's marrying up to the Saudis?
Well, I don't think so. I mean, I think it's been expected. When Mohammed bin Salman, MBS, when the whole Khashoggi deal started, there was no question that he was in trouble around the world. And there's also no question that Trump stepped in and helped salvage him. No doubt about it. When you get the President of the United States stepping in and then put pressure on other particular leaders, you know, and the Saudis have a lot of money. But as far as Jared Kushner, his son-in-law, there were 85 phone calls to Mohammed bin Salman in a one-month period of time. His father, of course, with the Qataris, you know, was trying to borrow money. There's a whole Mideast deal there going on. And then there was that foundation created with a couple of Trump officials that were forming this consulting group, you know, and all of a sudden they were miraculously paid amazing money to be part of the whole Israeli Arab consortium that, you know, was established through the Trump administration. So you can connect all the dots. So this doesn't surprise me. Look, Pompeo is trying to run for president, which is foolish, but he's trying to run for president. He courted in his book Mohammed bin Salman and, you know, and criticized Khashoggi, who's dead. So there's no shame when it comes to Saudi money.
No.
I used to live in the kingdom, and, as you know, and worked on in a company for a year there. And the kingdom is all about money, and the kingdom uses money to acquire people, places, and things. And golf tournaments to acquire people, places, and things.
And golf tournaments. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show with Bob Nay, former Ohio congressman, political analyst. I also wanted to get your thoughts on, we saw the videos that were released on Friday. I know your son's a police officer. You know, there are good police officers. These kind of things taint the entire pool. I kind of wanted to get your thoughts on what you saw on that.
Oh yes, I mean it's horrific. It's inexcusable. Now I saw two extremes. These are just a couple of people. I don't want to overdo this on two people make a statement and then it becomes law. One person had made a statement that this is done every single day and by everybody. That's not accurate. And then there were other people that totally excused it, which I don't know how they could, and that's not accurate. And I talked to a lot of people, you know, including my son and other police officers I know, and I think, you know, that a lot of police officers are absolutely, completely appalled, you know, and do not side with, with these officers in Memphis. I usually say, it's a court process, and you have to, go through the court process. But if you look at the video, there was no secret thing here where he had a gun or an automatic weapon and we didn't see it. You know, that wasn't the case. And then the high-fiving and, you know, everything else that was done afterwards was just unbelievable.
No, it's disgraceful. And but
I can't believe it.
No, but it's one of these things that, you know, I keep coming back to. At some point, there has to be change. There has to be some cultural change.
Jim Jordan of Ohio was asked a question in the media about this, and he said, well, this is very interesting, Rick. He said, well, no law would have prevented this. Well, okay, we have laws about murder, don't we? And maybe that law in itself about murder doesn't prevent a murder, but it helps, obviously, to have the law to deal with somebody that commits murder. So when, you know, somebody makes that statement, well, you know, the passing a law doesn't do anything. There are reasons there are laws, you know, to try to do something. I don't know that you can pass, a law specifically, obviously, for the case, but there can be something done, I assume, to the Department of Justice in particular, to have some type of setting of a standard of not just dealing with this, the law will deal with this, but setting up a standard of how people are to deal with situations across the country.
Yeah, I mean, and ending qualified immunity is one of the things that keeps being thrown out. Any thoughts on that?
I'm sorry, what was that?
The qualified immunity, the stuff that that basically says that they're not going to be held liable.
I would assume they have to have liability.
No, evidently, this is one of the things that even Lindsey Graham's talking about potentially, moving on this qualified immunity stuff that keeps popping up. That They're not personally responsible. Obviously, if they get convicted of a crime, that's one thing. But you know, this is what I'm being told is the potential remedy. And I was curious if you had a thought.
Well, I mean, they could have people can have insurance, just like malpractice, and the police officer could have insurance, or the union could, you know, be part of an insurance program that, you know, somebody would have to pay out of it because they may not have particular money, you know, themselves, but they would at least would forfeit that. But, you know, exempting them from anything with liability would be wrong, because anybody that's convicted or not convicted, O.J. Simpson is a great case, was acquitted but went to a civil court, right?
Yeah, eventually. But then he moved to Florida and hid all his money in pension funds, and they didn't get anything, filed bankruptcy.
Well, that's true. But at least technically you can still go after somebody in a civil case. So I would assume why would they be different?
Yeah, but I just looked it up, and the definition of qualified immunity is a legal doctrine that keeps police officers safe from civil lawsuits. It says, look, Democrats want to end it. Republicans, say that it goes too far.
I did not know there's qualified immunity in every case.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those things that there's no fear of. It's the city who gets sued. It's not the individuals.
Uh-huh.
So the cities get sued, yeah, and the cities go bankrupt, and the cities do all this stuff, but it's not the individuals. They're saying,
knew the cities pay, but I did not know, Rick, that there was a qualified immunity in every particular case. I had no idea.
Well, this is what they're saying, and this is why I ask, because I'm not sure where the answer is, because look, I've had friends who have become policemen over the years, and becoming in every case they change. And I think of a friend that I went to high school with who was one of the most passive guys you would have ever met. In fact, I used to beat up on him all the time in high school to try and toughen him up, because he could have been a heck of a basketball player if he had a spine. He became a university policeman, and within 2 years, he was basically thrown out for beating people up. So he went from pacifist to abuser within a very short period of time, and not even really in a big city environment. So I can't imagine the pressure of this mentality that there's a war zone going on and the citizens are the enemy. There's got to be a cultural shift.
Well, I mean, I think that there's good and bad in all aspects of all the fields, and I know we've had a lot of police that have been responsible in things, but in cases like this, you have to look at it and say, something went horrifically wrong, not a little bit wrong, horrifically wrong. There's something there, some culture created by someone or allowed by someone, and that's got to be delved into.
I'm there with you. Bob, I appreciate the time. As always, great stuff, my friend.
Thank you, Rick.
As always, our good friend Bob Ney. Want to take a quick break? Right back to wrap things up. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. What follows is for those who want to change the world from what it is to what they believe it should be. Those words were penned in the opening paragraph of the book Rules for Radicals, whose author, Saul Alinsky, was born on this day in labor history. The year was 1909. Saul Alinsky became one of the most famous community organizers in Chicago and even U.S. history. Alinsky was born to Russian Jewish immigrants. He earned his degree in archaeology from the University of Chicago, but could not find work due to the Great Depression. His first turn at organizing was that of a part-time labor organizer for the Congress of Industrial Organizations. Soon, he left labor organizing for a more broad-based community organizing. He worked in the back of the yards, forming the Back of the Yards Council, which became a prototype for scores of community organizations. In 1940, Alinsky formed the Industrial Areas Foundation, which served as a leader in community organizing training. He traveled the country helping to form similar community organizations. He then worked with African-American organizations, most notably helping to found Chicago's Woodland Organization. The Woodland Organization took on issues such as segregated housing and community health. The Woodland Organization remains active to this day. Alinsky's Rules for Radicals became a guidebook for organizing strategies for countless campaigns. A Time magazine article claimed that American democracy is being altered by Alinsky's ideas. And National Review magazine founder William F. Buckley said Alinsky was, quote, very close to being an organizational genius. At the core of his book are 12 straightforward maxims. For example, a good tactic is one your people enjoy. Another is, keep the pressure on, never let up. Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. You can check out our podcast there. Over the weekend, we did an episode on the video. And wow, we had a panel of folks come together for an in-depth discussion. A lot of folks over the years have said, hey, you do these quick hit 15-minute bits. We want to hear more in-depth. So we spent an hour talking about the release of the videos of the murder of Tyre Nichols, and I got to tell you, it was angering. It's frustrating, and I have gotten a lot of responses and good stuff, and I appreciate people putting in their thoughts of ideas on where we go, how we solve things, and I've even got a bunch of emails from people trying to defend what they saw. And that's the weird thing for me is that, you look at those videos and it's indefensible what they did. And yet I got he shouldn't have run. Oh, it didn't really happen the way the video makes it look. It was staged was another, basic denialism and conspiracy theory stuff. And this is the kind of fear of where we are. That we're trained that nothing is what it appears, and that if it doesn't fit into our neat little ideology, the police never do this stuff, or the police always do this stuff. You can't solve anything. Look, I say this all the time. I support the police when they're not wrong. In this instance, there is no right here. The first video I saw were, angry cops rushing at a guy who was calm going, hey, are we really going to do this? Hey, can we not? I saw angry, angry policemen who were out for blood. And that guy was running scared for his life and had nowhere to go. I saw them pick him up off the ground and pummel him when he couldn't stand on his own. Indefensible. And the sad reality is we have almost no one anymore in power positions. We've got mass irresponsibility in powerful positions. People who are only out there to push an agenda. You've got politicians who should know better being irresponsible. And it's not just the police thing. I mean, I look at the video of Paul Pelosi that was released last week. And immediately the right wing spin machine goes into, oh, looks like he was having a gay tryst. Oh, he was an extra. He was cheating on Nancy with a guy. That didn't really happen. Oh, it wasn't that big of a deal. Denialism. Conspiracy theory. Oh, did it really happen the way it looks? And the New York Times went and got some tweets from some representatives who, either doubted that the attack actually happened or the details of the thing, or was it a male prostitution ring? Now, these are elected officials. These are people with big megaphones. These are media personalities. These are commentators who are supposed to be respected. Pushing nonsense and conspiracy. The guy who did it evidently was walking out of court and said the only thing that he regrets is he was sorry he didn't get more of them. But even that, that's not believed because we've got irresponsible people in leadership. It's up to us, folks. It's up to us to claw some of this back. Senators, congressmen, they need to be better. Just my thoughts. I want to hear yours. Email me, Rick at thericksmithshow.com. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast wherever you...
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.